Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, Black family, to another installment of the Raising Awareness Group Blog Talk. Dawa, thank you for calling and joining us. Let me give you a brief synopsis of who and what we are about. We are a collective group of common goal, Black main direction is the homeschooling, truthful knowledge, and education of our Black family through a truthful center point of view. We affirm the teachings and writings of transition elders like Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Dr. Zhou, Empress Quest Welsing, Dr. Amos, Dr. John G. Jackson, and others. We shall not allow any misinformation and propaganda from white academia to be passed along our umbrella. We've taken the time to formulate an awesome introduction supplement of homeschooling from the children for the children of the community. The supplement is available on our website. I need you to go to our YouTube channel that's named Raising Awareness Group Media. There you'll have access to the link to our website and past awesome blog talk shows with in-depth videos and lectures and tours from the likes of world travelers like Renopa Rashidi and one of our own members of the Elders Council, Grand Saber Infadishi. Again, for the link to our YouTube channel, Raising Awareness Media Group. Also, if you're on Facebook, you can find us easily there as well. We have a like page named Raising Awareness Group Media. So definitely go like our like page. It's brand new. We post on it daily. Now, quickly back to our homeschooling introduction. Our supplement is easy to visually digest and is tailored not only for the children but also for the family. We chose to make the supplement family-oriented. It is not just predicated for one entity. We at the Raising Awareness Group believe that the parents play the most crucial role in the early development of the children, of education of our children. That's in part why the supplement has activities for the parents to get involved as well. So please check that out, family, at ASAP. We also here at the Raising Awareness Group are in collaboration with our brothers in arms against any form of sexual dysfunction and deviant acts against men, boys, women, children, and babies. PM, that's the Straight Black Pride Movement, in exposing the so-called secret, the attacks of un-African behavior towards non-blacks or even what's going on amongst our people. We ask everyone to support our extended family with the SBPM, the Straight Black Pride Movement, as well. We also recommend our moral and methodology organization criteria for the adults. We at the Raising Awareness Group subscribe to Ma'at, which is the original African moral system. Yes, we know Ma'at has been chopped and screwed over time, but we have taken our people to understand that the first world's moral system was an African moral system. Thanks to the University of Kemet Press, we strongly recommend all adults in the community to purchase some awesome literatures like SABA, Study Team, Survival Organization. Interested in homeschooling, we recommend African K-12 from the University of Kemet Press. If you're interested in reading the largest book ever to be written by an African scholar, I'd advise you to get African Time, Volume 1. It is the first 1,000-plus authored book by an African scholar. This book also contains the most up-to-date in science, origins of humanity, astronomy, and up-to-date material from past master teachers, historical facts, and more. any African history that's taught must be taught, spoken on, and illustrated by African historians only. This is an excellent quality and scholarly works that has hard-working brothers and sisters from the University of Kemet Press bringing this type of scholarship to our people. Also, these are the official books of the Raising Awareness Group, and we strongly recommend them for you. Update your library today, fam.
The Creator could not have intended for us as African people to be a poor people if the Creator implanted in our soils all the wealth that was planted there. We talk about the minerals and the oil and the gold and the this and the that that's implanted in African soil. So it seems as if the Creator blessed us from the very beginning with wealth and possibility. Therefore, for us to be going hungry over this wealth and to be starving in the midst of it and to be perceived as a dependent, indebted people while our wealth is being shipped out to other people, we are actually selling a lot of it for pennies and nickels and dimes and less, means that there is something wrong with our consciousness. Because ultimately, ladies and gentlemen, we've said what? That the wealth of a people is ultimately not in their land. But where is it? In the mind.
All right.
The wealth of man is in his mind. In his consciousness.
Peace, Black African Power. Welcome to another installment of the Raising Awareness Group Blog Talk Show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, K-Dub. And tonight we're going to be discussing an interesting topic that, you know, that affects the black community as a whole. Buying black while broke. Yeah, it kind of gets you, don't it? Buying black while broke. Why are we buying black while broke? Well, we're going to get into that. And I'm going to introduce my panel tonight. Brother Fred and my other host, Akil Ikonaten. And our special guest tonight is a man who knows the insides and outs of our economic situation. Proudly to present Brother Garfield. Brother Garfield, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm right here, live and direct out of Bronx, New York. Peace, brother. How y'all doing?
Pretty good. Peace to you. Peace to you. Peace to all.
Yeah.
Brother Fred, how you doing?
Thanks for having me on, brother. Mm-hmm.
All right, not a problem, man. Not a problem. Always a pleasure. So, let's get to it. I mean, as you see, we came up with this title, Buying Black While Broke. You know, we'll start off with a panel award. Or Brother Garfield started off with, why are we buying black while we're broke? Why is that?
Because we have grown up in a society where it's all about being flashy and being. I mean, I know people who basically want to look good instead of supplying food and groceries for their family. They'd rather go to a party and have the most expensive shoes on and have a Gucci bag, and their kids are starving. That's the type of culture that's promoted. Whether it's in the music, whether it's in anything, the books that these people are reading, that's what they promote. You know, the love and hip-hop type of attitude. You know, it's all about being flashy all the time. But when you go home, it's a whole different thing. So one of the things is that, tax time. It's what, I don't know what energy ran through you guys to do this show. But think about it. This is tax time. And everybody's getting their tax money. And they're just waiting to get it so they could spend it. Because, they always say that if we ever got reparations as a people, it really don't make no sense because the money's going to go right back into the colonizer's hands. Because, it's going to go right back in his hands as we get it. We're going to buy the flashiest car. We're going to spend right through that money through all the biggest parties and buy alcohol and give it away free, and but nothing to keep that wealth staying as, you know, to gain richness or health or wealth or invest, reinvest in themselves. One of the things I want to address too is that, you see, my idols today are what do you call it? Boyce Watkins and Claude Anderson. Those are my idols. And the reason why they are my idols is because they are speaking the language that I speak, and I think that's good for our people. Now, is Claude Anderson and Boyce Watkins the most popular people in the black community? No. Do they do presentations and sometimes they're boring and put you to sleep? Sure. But is their information vital for the future of the black folks in America or even all over the world? Because the advice that they give me, I replicate that advice and come up with my own way of giving that same information out every Wednesday and Sunday on the channel. Because I have to learn. I learned from Elijah Muhammad, message to the black man, the blueprint that he put together for pooling our resources. So anytime you hear me talk about that, that's who I got it from. When you talk about Amos Wilson, Blueprint of Black Power. Now, he's one of the major influences. Yes, this book is 900 pages, but I had to read it to get a feel of what I need to do if I'm ever going to be in the public eye. And so he's also influential to me. But these are people, Francis Quest Wilson, Nellie Fuller, these are people who have influenced me from the past. And now presently, I just love what Boyce Watkins is doing, and I love what Claude Anderson is doing. But the average Joe don't care about what Boyce Watkins or Claude Anderson. They don't care. You know what I'm saying? So the problem is we are in love with being broke. We actually are. We feel as a people that we should be broke. Yeah. There's a big controversy now. When anybody's making money, let me tell you something. When I grew up in Jamaica, man, my mom, they always have a saying. If you go into any community and say anything free, never good yet. Anytime somebody giving you something free, it's never good. You always got to pay. And it seems like our community, we love free stuff. So when you get something free, sometimes it's what we call, quote unquote, it's half-assed. It's not what you really should get. That's why it's free. So now, if we took the time to basically talk about generating wealth and passing on to our children, then that's a conversation we should always have. So every Wednesday and Sunday at 6 p.m., I do that. But I'm saying this to tell you right now, we have on my website, Dagger Squad INC, we have several different services that I offer. Anybody who's broke could join in and make money. We could make, you, Akil, and the other brother, y'all could make money tonight. Just by signing up for the Z Black Card. That's on my website. If you'll never find a prepaid debit card by Russell Simmons, Magic Johnson, or anybody that pays you to refer people. And that's what the Z Black Card does. For the people who are in check systems who don't have a checking account, you need a card where you could get your pay stub, your paycheck to go in your account instead of you going to a check cashing in Philly or in New York and they charge you 2% of your check every 2 weeks or every week. You could eliminate that. Just get the Z Black Card. That's one way to make money, by referring people. You can get $50, $100, or $25, depending on which level that you sign up at. But we have even a tax program. People doing taxes, you go in there, you have a company that's called VTax that charges you, I think, 1%, and the person who refers you gets 2% of your tax return. So that's 3%, less than what you're paying for it to be done by any other company. But and then if you refer people, you get 2% of whatever they get. And it goes on and on and on and on. So there's ways to make money, but people don't understand. It's making money is not the problem. The problem is that we rather spend than try to earn and save. I have a policy, man. I've stopped working for anybody for the past probably like 8 to 10 years. I haven't worked for anybody. The key to me keeping the money that I have is if I spend $1,000 on a mortgage or $300 on groceries, I have to make that money back that I put out. So this is why I can't be broke, because I'll find some way to replenish that money that goes out. So if I spend $300, I'm thinking the whole day, how can I replenish that $300 before I spend it? What am I going to do? I got to do something today, man. Boom, 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 boom. Let's see how much trade lines I could sell. Let's see how much Z-Black cars I could sell. Let's see who want to do taxes. Who want to do this? But we are more conscious. See, I don't know. Maybe it's the way I was brought up, but I don't really care. Fancy stuff I don't really care about fancy stuff. I don't care about jewelry or none of these things. I don't have to have the best-looking car. I don't care. I don't care about those things. All I care about is what I'm passing on as a legacy for my children. That means the houses that I have, in my will, they have to go to my children. That's how you pass wealth on. If you read Frederick Douglass, he talked about, although he did make this error late in his life and married, I think he married to a white woman late in his life, his second wife or third wife, whatever it was. But he said that the reason why black folks can't be wealthy or carry on a sense of having pride and richness is because we would marry outside the race. So when we die, the money would be passed on to that race now, instead of passing on to generation to generation and keep the money in the family. So I am not going to make that mistake happen. Whatever I do, like my daughter, she works in my business. She's in charge of the customer service department. I told her, I don't want you working for anybody. I'd rather you work for your dad. And, you know, she's like, no, I want to do my own thing. I want to be independent. I said, nah, you're going to work for me, because whatever I'm doing, I'm passing it on to you. And you're going to be the one in charge to say, hey, this house and this amount is for this child, and this, you're going to be the one to do all of that. So I'm passing my legacy on to you, because anything can happen now. How many of us have insurance right now? Talk about generational wealth. You have a UIL program through Dawn Douglas. She's one of the people that we work with on the Data Squad. How can you generate wealth? You could do it by getting a life insurance. Life insurance, they got a UIL. The money that you invested for a year, you could take it out and invest in a business. That's your money. So all these things, imagine, and on a side note, I don't know if you ever saw my Facebook post when I said that, if everybody in Chicago signed up for life insurance, I guarantee that there would not be any killing in Chicago. You know why? Because life insurance companies would be out of business. They would be out of business. Mm-hmm. Imagine everybody had a $1 million policy. You got 700 people died. Imagine if that was 700 million that had to be paid out. People might say, well, golly, I never thought of that. But the policies are going to be expensive. No, they're not. Under 25 is not that expensive. It's just that we don't know. We don't know. But the issue is not that we're trying to make money off of our lives, but that money, if an insurance company had to pay $700 million out, think about it. They wouldn't want to be in the business anymore. Like, nah, man, we coming out of Chicago. Because we paid out $700 million last year. Imagine how much we're going to pay next year. Could be another $600-700 million again. So the insurance companies, who are one of the biggest lobbyists in Congress, because you got the big fat cats, the big six, insurance, oil, banks, you know, whoever. And insurance companies lobby both sides, Republicans and Democrats. And the key is, if whatever they want, they get. And I guarantee you, if everybody in the community was insured, it'd make a bigger difference. But it seems like killing black lives is a big business. It's good business, because it brings gentrification. It lowers the values of the real estate. So all these houses in Cooks County going for $1, $100 or whatever, the people that live there are not buying it up. They're kicking them out of the community. You don't think all this killing in Chicago or anywhere in the country is for a reason? Gentrification. That's the motivation behind it, real estate. And look who we have in government now, Donald Trump. Big real estate guru who failed like 70, 90% of the times his business failed, but he's looked at this great businessman. And the taxpayer has been paying off when he filed bankruptcy on these different projects that he failed on. He used the government to bail himself out. And then he talks about people getting money off of this or money off of that. You know, the hypocrisy. But let me just say this, man. Wealth, or developing wealth, is an art, and we don't pay attention more than we should. We're more interested in mix-up, in people beefing, in people warring. We like the love and hip-hop stuff. We like, you know, this beef that's going on in the community. We live off of it. We love it. So, but when it comes to generating wealth and talking wealth and looking out for ourselves for the future, we don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear it.
Well, before we get to this next question, for those listening to the show tonight, Buying Black While Broke, some of you logged in to listen to it on Blog Talk, some of you called in. The number to call in is 323-870-4085. You can also text your questions while the show, as we are discussing the Buying Black While Broke during the show. We're going to open the lines up near the end of the show. But while you're listening, you can text your questions to 267-585-2944. Once again, you can text questions into the show at 267-585-2944. All right, Brother Garfield.
Hey, by the way, I got a sister Cheryl Stevenson, who's on my team. She's also in the, you guys could punch her in if you want. She's at a 281 number. And also, hold on, okay. Hey, peace to Fred. I didn't even see your text. Also, we have Sister Monica. She's a 912 area code. You could also bring her in. All right? All right. All right.
All right.
We can plug her in right now.
Yeah, we just opened her up.
There she is. We'll open up. She's live.
Monica, are you there?
Oh, yes. This is Madeline.
We're good. We're good. Welcome to the show.
Hey, peace. You guys are doing a great job. Good information.
All right. Now, here's a question for you, Brother Garfield. We have economics. Now, one thing that we fail to do is educate ourselves, and we have a hindrance of education. There's a lot of factors why we don't really get ourselves involved in black economics.
Right.
Now, the one thing that I see is that we don't value ourselves individually or as a community. So the question is, do we need to value ourselves or our communities before we even value economics or black businesses?
Hey, let me tell you something. Yes, we do. I think what it has to do with us too, we have to make a change within ourselves. I have a business, and I have to set up, you know, a customer service department because of all the calls we're getting and so forth. So we got to make sure how we do business is professional also. We got to call our people back. We got to talk in a professional tone. We can't talk like we're on the side of the corner street, like we trying to, you know what I'm saying, like we talking to our best friend or whatever. We got to treat people with respect and make sure that we are professional at all times. And I think that's one of the problems, too, with our businesses. We don't look at our businesses as credible because of the customer service part to it. And Sister Monica, she deals with all of this stuff of setting up a business and how to deal with people and all of that stuff. But the bottom line is we're not professional enough, so the people don't trust our people because we just don't know how to run businesses. We just decide, hey, I like this business, man. I just want to open it. I want to open a business. Yeah, but how do you run a business? Do you do a course? Do you have a conversation with other business owners? Do you do like a little survey in your community, how people do customer service? Have you checked out like 5 to 10 businesses that do the things that you do? Why are they successful? These are the questions. Hey, I always want to open up a hair salon. I always want to do this. But have you done the training to deal with people on a professional level in the business that you're trying to do? The key. We got to be honest with ourselves. We are very sloppy at businesses. This is why we don't support our own businesses. You know, the other day a sister said to me, she had ordered something from me, and she said to me, she said, Garfield, I would suggest you do X, Y, and Z so it's more clearer to the clientele so that there won't be any confusion. Because I was a little bit kind of confused, and I got perturbed over the fact that I was confused. But when the order came through, I see what you were talking about. But Garfield, you got to be better at explaining. I didn't say, what are you talking about? I've been doing this for 10 years. Are you going? No. I said, you know what, sister? I'll definitely take that into consideration. I wrote down what she said. I thought about it. And I said, you know what? She's right. I need to deliver and be more clearer with certain things, this particular item that I'm selling, so that the people can understand, so it's clearer to them, so they're not left in a state that, hey, I don't know what he's talking about, but let's hope it works. You know, so we as a people, we got to be humble when you have a business, and you got to know how to deal with people. You know, we love our people, but we got to know how to deal with them. And some of our people, they're the most arrogant. They could be jerks, but we just got to know how to deal with our people on a certain level, you know. And that's one of the main problems that we find. So it's not that we don't have the businesses; it's just that our people don't trust our business, and we're not professional enough, you know. And then some of us, you know, because of the self hate, we don't want to support our own too. That's the other piece I think you probably were referring to.
Yeah.
I mean, Elijah Muhammad tried, man. When he said the white man is the devil, he tried to turn us psychologically speaking. And you know, we just don't. One of the main things, because I'm so attached to Nation of Islam because of my life early in the 90s, one of the greatest things that he taught was gaining a knowledge of self. And gaining a knowledge of self is what you guys call, you're the raising awareness group. And it's a shame. Elijah has been teaching from 1930-31, and it's a shame you got to start a group that's called raising awareness. Like, we haven't had so many greats to raise our awareness. You know, it's a shame. We have not been raised at all. That's why you have to have your group. This is why my brother, the grandmaster teacher, that I'm going to call him that, my brother Kilimanjaro, this is why they have to put out books saying how to research and methodology. This is why he had to put out the book about Mayat, which is the book is my guy that I'm going to use if once my abandon now starts. That's going to be our constitution. The book that he has on Mayak. You know what I'm saying? The book on K-12, How to Start a Schooling System. Those books, the guide is there. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. The guide is there. So,
yes.
But we have to raise awareness to the point where people know what's going on and see if we can do better as a whole culture. Because I can't do everything. Boyce Atkins can't do everything. Claude Anderson can't do everything. It takes a collective effort. This is why the Dagger Squad is going in all 50 states. We're just going to get 10 people to network who are into networking so that we could build a foundation where we could set up workshops in each state. You know, Sister Monica, she's in South Carolina. Cheryl is in Texas and Alabama. You know, we have people in North Carolina. We have people in Tennessee. Dr. Yaya and Brother Sean, Seneb Sean. Is in Tennessee, and we're gonna do it that way because that's how you gotta start. You gotta start small. Ohio, we've been requested in Ohio, requested in Virginia. I just tell them to start a little group, like 10 or more people, do some networking, get some business minded people. We come out here, do the workshops, and teach the people, because we have enough information out there. We don't need no more information. We got the information on history, we got the information on science, and all we gotta do now is learn how to apply all that information, start our own schools, and start dealing with economics. That's all we got to do. We good. We got enough history already. We got Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, and everything.
We have our history. We have all of this information out here. And
yes, sir.
Now people need the education of, and this is both to you, Brother Garfield, and Sister Monica. When
yes,
you have people saying they want to do a thing, they don't get the training. But above all, in my opinion, is that they don't have the basic building blocks, the definitions of a thing. So you had you on the show before, so we're going to kind of address this to people who listen to the show or someone who has some tax money and want to start something or whatever by giving them a building block. For example, here's a question. What is the basic definition of economics? And then follow up that with that definition. You got the definition of economics. Once you answer that, what is the definition of black economics?
So so when we think in terms of economics, you know, we're thinking you it's broken down into two. You got microeconomics and you got macroeconomics. Microeconomics, individual decision making and trends, and the company on a lower level, on an individual level, and then macroeconomics is dealing from a global perspective, how the government look at things, unemployment rate. So that's why when you hear the news and they're talking about the economy, they're talking about unemployment rate, jobs, where the businesses are they overseas, are they here? Because those types of decisions is what drives macro. And I think we get caught up with what the big picture is, but we're really concerned with microeconomics, which is on our level, our individual level. I.e. example, decision making. So if someone was coming out of high school and they wanted to find out what was the most economic way to do this, then they will be deciding, you know, how much is the cost of college and can I afford it? Or will it put me into debt? Or is going to college put me in a financial position that I not only, if I end up with loans and things of that nature, will I be able to pay it back, or will I end up in more debt? Or should I start a business? And if I do start a business, what should I start? What are the historical trends in that industry? Is it cost efficient? Do I have the knowledge, skills, and ability to be able to facilitate that business? Or should I collaborate with someone? Should I be the prime contractor, or should I be a subcontractor? Should I go to training? Should I find people who are skilled in those areas to help me run that business? And so that's why we speak a lot about getting you a team in 2017, because when you think in terms of economics in general, from micro on macro, all about decision making, what decisions are you making with your pocketbook right now that will give you longevity from a financial perspective, giving you financial power, giving you economic power individually in your own family or across the board in your community to be able to share and train and bring somebody else aboard. From the global perspective, what decisions are you making right now if you are a business owner or aspiring to be a business owner where you can actually create jobs to help with that unemployment rate, or can your business expand where you could possibly become a franchise someday, or you could duplicate your business in other states and you take advantage of the economic power wherever we are. So when we talk in terms of black economics, one of the things Sara Imhotep always remind me of is that, Mo, if you're going to talk about economics, you got to talk about relationships. We have to, Garfield said it best, we have to gain loyalty with one another. We have to actually trust one another. We have to create a code of conduct amongst our business organizations where we collab with one another and we can create more jobs. We can create more, we increase our net worth so that we can be able to get more people either invest in our business so they can have a return on their investment. So either way it goes, we have to think decision making and what are the historical trends and the things that you're getting involved in. Because if I can do T-shirts, well, if I've never done T-shirts and I'm good at so if I'm in the T-shirt business, I'm good at embroidery, but I'm not as good at screen printing, but Garth is good at screen printing, I should be screen printing and embroidery. I should cover the embroidery, Garth should cover the screen printing. Together, we can produce more shirts to different clients, but I shouldn't try to do both. If I know how to make pizza, I shouldn't be trying to make burgers. I should do the pizza, let somebody else make the burger or whatnot. If I'm good at finance, I'm not good at HR, I should collab with somebody who's in HR and finance. We come together, we put out a proposal, and we win contracts. That's how you increase your economic power. That's where black power should be headed. And I think when people are talking economics, they're thinking from, okay, how can I help my community? Well, guess what? The economy is driven off of the decision-making of their community. So if they pour money into your community, they pour jobs into your community, they pour businesses, big businesses come in your community, they get the big tax break from the government, and when you get that money or you get that job, you just spend your money on miscellaneous things, but you're not investing that money and getting a return on your investment and increasing your network, then guess what? It's none of what black economic power goes down the drain. Come right now, and they say, hey, Garfield, I want to give you this contract, $5 million contract. I want you to go out and I want you to help everybody who has bad credit based on this $5 million. Now, Garfield's objective is when he helps these individuals, when their credit get right, they're supposed to be making decisions with that money that they're going to accumulate to duplicate that money. They shouldn't just spend the money and then now guess what? Now next year I got to give Garfield another $50 million to help these people, because all that they did was deplete their resources, deplete their finances. So you want to talk black economics, and black people, our people, have to make better decisions with how they're going to spend their money, because that's what's going to drive the economy. So when you talk about pouring into the businesses, now businesses, back to what Garfield said, our code of conduct, how our business culture, how we're doing business with one another, what type of products that we're pushing on in the economy, amongst our community? Are we giving them quality? Are we just giving them anything? Is it something that I'm going to come back and buy? Is it something I'm going to refer to somebody else? Or is it something that I'm like, you know what, I support you because, you know, you're trying to do good, but I'm not coming back. You know, so I'm sorry. I can go on and on. I've been talking on this all day, so I'm like fired up.
I feel you. So, okay. So we're on the topic of black economics. Garfield or Sister Monica, what outside factors hinders the growth of black economics?
You say what?
What outside source? I mean, you know, you have redlining, you have gerrymandering, you have all types of different things. What this, because the bottom line is, though, we have a system that's already fighting against us. You know, when I say us, I mean people of African descent. And the bottom line is, if we have that fight, so it's tough enough that we got to have a fight with people that look like us. You know, so it's kind of tough on us. As a culture to try to listen, we don't have our own corner store in New York. The other day, my brother Danny from the Dagger Squad at MBK said, "Show me a corner store." All the corner stores are either Arab owned or owned by Latinos. We are our stores, so we're in a community. You tell me that black folks couldn't put together and just open a simple corner store that sells necessities that you buy when the supermarkets are closed? You're telling me we can't do that? So that's where you got to go back to basic. But then when we open it, it comes back to, are we professional enough to control, own and control a business? Are we going to run it like a rat hole, like a homeless shelter? You know, so those things count. You know, so I mean, we know who's fighting against us already for whatever we're doing here, but we just don't have the customer service, the regular things that people do as business owners. We just don't have the etiquette at times, and it's just crazy at times. You know, I deal with. I remember when I ordered the books from Kemet Press. The professionalism of the brother that I dealt with on the phone, I mean, I don't have to call his name, but I'm just saying, just the professionalism alone made me want to buy his whole book that he got, just because of the professionalism. You know, I'm like, I just went to buy one book. I think I ended up buying two or three. You know, just the fact that the way how he dealt with me, I felt at home, I felt comfortable, I feel like, you know what, this is somebody I feel like I should spend a lot of money with. So those things play a part when it comes to economics, and we need to figure that out. We need to realize that. But I don't know if we feel too prideful, like we can't be open and say, hey, you know what? I need to be this way to run a business. You know, when people call me or call my customer service department, they should be like, you know what? I like the way they answer the phone. I like the way they communicate it. I just like that. And that should be a turn on for us as a people. And we need to stress that, because I made a lot of mistakes running a business. But now I'm better. I'm around a people who inspire me. Monica has changed me. She might not see the change. She won't know the change. But a lot of things that she says, you know, because she's on Facebook Live like four or five times a week or a day. So she talks about different things. Yeah, I'll put you out there. And she talks about different things that we should do. And you know, I'm like, you know, it's silly. If you look at the show we had tonight, just basic things that she's saying that you learned as a third grader. She brings it up and put it in the form of what we should have today in form of as far as language and communicating with us. And the way she does it, if we pay attention to what she's saying, she's right on point. But people don't pay attention to those little details. They're more interested in, like, how much money am I make this week? What about your customer service? What about the person who spent money with you? Are they going to come back? You know how many people call me to order trade lines? Be good. I could make $400, $500 or even $600 for the order. But the point is, their credit is not fixed. So why are they getting trade lines? So I could have made $600 one time and then 40 days later, they find out, boy, I should have done my credit repair first. So I said, you know what? I tell them to do the credit repair. And once they do the credit repair, they still got to order the train-ons when I'm done. So then once they get through and it works out for them, then they'll tell people about me, because any business with sale is based on word of mouth. So if you, the word of mouth is that, oh, you're a horrible businessman and you don't know how to deal with customers, I mean, what's your reputation? You could have got 8, 9, 10 more customers based off one person. So, you know, so it's just not adequate in how we deal with business, man. We just got to do better, man. You know, it starts with looking in the mirror first. Why is my business not doing well? Ask yourself why. We got to do better, family. We just got to do better. I don't know if Sister Monica want to add on to that.
Yes. I want to talk to you, since you touched from a social perspective, I want to hear the factors from a compliance perspective. So my background is in auditing, so I have the privilege of actually seeing what they do to us in reference to having opportunity in business and make and stand on top. So a good example of that is that we have a grant that we're putting in here in South Carolina where they changed the game, the rules of the playing field for starting a nonprofit. Now they're making nonprofits get a business license, even though it's exempt to pay the fees, just to get a license. And then once we got down there, we were told you have to go through zoning. So even though it was exempt for you to get the license, you had to pay a zoning fee. And then depending on where you were, was determined whether or not you can have that nonprofit in that area. That's a hindrance factor. Why? Because if you are not up on the compliance of federal, state, and local government and the changes they are making towards businesses, you will up the game come next fiscal year, so to speak. So, for example, if you have not renewed your business license is expired December 31st of the previous calendar year. So if you have not renewed yet because you're waiting to do your taxes, when you get down there to that business office, whatever state you're in, 9 out of 10, they're going to have a nice surprise for you. There's going to be some type of changes that may either going to be something to do with depreciation of assets. It might have to do with the licenses or maybe the amount that they're charging in reference to the tax rate. Or they may come out, if you're in big business, you've been doing business for a while, they may come out and inspect organizational management, what Garfield spoke on, organization of your business, how did you start your business, where did the money come from, the records that you get, Secretary of State documents, EIN, 501c3 approvals, all of those different, how much money, what bank you're banking with, where the money is coming from, what is being spent on, all of those little different things right there to keep you in business, inspections if you're dealing with food or anything of that nature, health and welfare, VHEC. When they change their rules and you have not stayed up on the rules, which means whoever maintaining the operations section of your business, if they aren't up on the compliance, when they come in, they either one or two things, they're going to shut you down, or they're going to mitigate your opportunities to do business with anything else. So when we talk about what's hindering us, we have to also think about compliance and historical trends. What areas are they hitting? Who are they hitting? What businesses are they keeping from going up? A lot of things we talked about in reference to State of Garfield, in reference to government contractors or any other contracts where they're making money. If you don't know the history of Trump and how they got their millions, his grandfather had a grant. A housing grant. He took advantage of it. He paid all his family members a certain amount. Government tried to sue him. They didn't get anywhere because the regs wasn't up. But now the regs have changed. But they took advantage of the tax-exempt portion of it, of having business and gain on their profit side of the business. So the factors that hinder us is we don't know the rules of the game. We're participating in a system that we don't know the rules. So we have to sit under people like Claude Anderson or read Dr. Amos Wilson books and any other, listen to the live streams of Dr. Boyce Watkins, and so that we can stay and understand the current trends of what's going on. Because if you started business in the 90s and you have not checked the compliance of the 2000s, you are out of bounds, which means when you try to do big business, see, I think what happens is we try to come up on just people coming and buying stuff from us every day. we haven't gotten in the mind on how to expand. We shy away from doing business with the government, but everybody else is out there taking the money and taking advantage of it. So we're sitting over here, well, I just want my people to buy from me. Well, your people don't even have enough money in their job to spend with you. They're spending,
right.
They don't have any disposable money to spend with you. So how are your business gonna gain wealth, or how are you gonna increase your net worth or your business if the people in your community don't have the money to spend with you? And oh, by the way, if they're giving tithes and offerings, that's less money right there.
Hey, that's foul. Don't be hitting them like that. You're gonna get the people mad.
Don't get mad. What I'm saying is that besides your bills, besides your utilities, you also have other charitable obligations that you hold dear to your heart. And if you have that money coming out as well, then your exposable money, you don't have enough. That's just enough for you to probably turn up, make yourself happy a little bit on the weekend. And so when we talk in terms of paying attention to the historical spending habits of the people around you, if you don't, then those are factors that's going to hinder Black economics, because you're spending, or you have your business mounted in areas that's not going to increase your net worth. So you're going to have to think about expansion, or you're going to have to think about doing business with local, state, and federal government. And when you get involved with that, you're going to have to either collaborate or put players on your team who understand the compliance and who stays in the game. Continue to be trained on what's going on so you can capitalize. You can't stay stuck. If you have went to college and you've gotten a degree and you start in the business and they've stopped, you know, there's no more opportunity for you to grow in that business, then guess what? You shouldn't say, well, my skills is in this and I don't feel like learning nothing else. Huh? While you was learning that, you should have had a minor. And while you had that minor,
yep.
You should have had a hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ain't continuing to hustle and renewing your hustles, that's why I like Garfield. And on that website, she got about 50 hustles, right? If you ain't renewing your hustles, if our community is not renewing their hustles, then we are our factors that's hindering our Black power. Because you know why? We have gotten content with being subject matter experts in something that we started with, and we don't like change.
All right. Now, before we get to the next question, we're going to bring up the aspect of those listening in. You can text your questions in while doing the show at 267-585-2944. Those who want to listen on the phone, you can call 323-870-4085. You can also visit us online or listen to the show online at blogtalkradio.com, Raising Awareness Group. Now, Sister Monica, on you answering the question on the factors that are hindering Black economics, you hit on several things. You talked about banking. You talked about extra residual income, having extra income. And that's one thing I noticed, that one of my philosophies is that, well, in order for us to invest in a Black business or support Black ownership or whatever, we need to have some money. And the one thing I always get feedback on is that we need to save money. We need to save money. And some of my friends will say, well, you're talking a foreign language to certain people. People from the hood, people doing this, people doing that, or whatever. Why is it, actually to both of you all, why is saving money such a foreign aspect?
Because they don't have any money to save a dollar. They have not... No, that's serious. I'm serious. You're talking about people who are either working minimum wage jobs or who are barely getting over minimum wage, and they're living, and paycheck to paycheck to them is a reality more than it's just a conversation. And so when you say save, so that person has to literally go back, take out a budget. They have to be shown a budget and taking it out, and where their money is going to come from, their money is going to come from what are you buying in your household that you might not necessarily need? Okay, so you don't need to buy these snacks this month. You wipe out debt, take that $2.50 and put that over there. Okay, let me see. How many times did you stop at the coffee shop this week? Okay, instead of stopping five, stop three. Let's take that $15, let's put that over there. So they're going to have to be taught that you have money. I'll give you a huge example. The reason, and some of them don't have any money because when they completed their W-4 withholding certificate, they're probably only claiming with dependents when they should be claiming allowances. And if they own a home or own a business, they could be taking advantage of some more of that money. But when that federal dollars, when they get that money back, some of them just increasing their withholdings, and they're getting the money back and they're just spending it all up. But at the end of the year, when they try to go taxes, they either owe money or they break even. Well, the advantage to that is that if you're in that situation, try getting involved with one of these opportunities that Gofford has on his website, because that gives you the opportunity to be a home-based business. Once you start a home-based business, you can take advantage of the tax credit. While you're inflating your allowances during the year, if you have a job and you live in paycheck to paycheck, at the end of the year, you can take advantage of things that you already do: cell phone bill, internet bill, car maintenance, meals you eat out every day, getting all the tax credit money back, decreasing your taxable income. Now there's your money, then there's your refund, and now you have money to save.
That's my point. That's one of my points. But when you say that to somebody, they just throw it out the window like, yeah, whatever. They can't. It's that it goes back to that value aspect that I asked about earlier, where if you don't value yourself, How can you save money to improve your life or support a black business if your whole core is sick? Why can't we just like, okay, let me cut my cable down? I don't watch that much TV. Any of that. When you talk about saving, it's like a sickness where they never heard of it. They have no aspect at all of what to save money for, which is why we go back to the aspect of buying black while broke. Like it just boggles my mind where they just can't even save $5 to just put it up and not go buy a pair of shoes or whatever. But let me get off my soapbox. Now, another issue that came about is Huffington Post put out a list or a story about black banking. Now, I shared that post across different groups across Facebook, and you have people who have different views of, well, I'm not banking black because they're still part of the whole system, the white system, and this and that. Then you got other people saying, well, I'm not banking black because they black. What is your view, or what is the point and importance of the black bank? Garfield, Monica.
What is so important about the black bank?
Yeah. Is there or is there not a... The importance of the rest, or is it relative, banking with black banks?
Yeah, it's relevant because it cut out a lot of the craziness that goes on with the white banks, how they look at you. And but, I mean, to each his own. I mean, I have Carver in New York, and, you know, in Jersey, they got other black banks, and, you know, they got black banks all over, you know, but what, I mean, it cuts out the redlining and all these different things that goes on when people making decisions about loans and zones and neighborhoods where you come from. And, you know, you live here, so I got to look at you and scrutinize you more than everybody else. And, you know, but it goes back to basic, though. I mean, just clean up your credit, man. Just clean up your credit yourself from scratch. The black banks are going to get you money. The black credit unions are going to get you money. But, I mean, you still got to be qualified. Not because it's a black bank, you think you're just going to go out of the end and get money just like that. You know, and that's just a misconception. We feel like things just got to be handed to us. You know, we got to start from basic. And for everybody that's listening out there, no matter what we say tonight, you got to start from somewhere. And if it means starting with us cleaning up your credit, basically just doing that alone, you could put yourself in a position. Because sometimes credit cards, It's like an insurance. You know, I said on the show today, if you don't have 6 months worth of rent or 6 months worth of mortgage, right now that means you're living paycheck to paycheck. And this is where we got to make steps. We can't just get up and say, hey, I'm going to be rich tomorrow. It goes step by step. You know, right now you might rent an apartment. And as I said, if you don't have 6 months worth of rent, that means you're struggling. So you got to put yourself in a position and come up with a plan. You know, as men, you guys might not want to hear this, but women to me are the better planners. Women seem to care about 10 years from now or 15 years from now, this is where I want to be. Men think about right now. I want to make sure I have this right now, make sure I have that right now. But women are more into, hey, I'm planning for the future, and let's do this for the future. So let's put a plan together. And then when you put the plan together, you ask yourself, how can you achieve the plan? So you start. It's like when you listen to my show, my show is in stages. We say, okay, first and foremost, let's clean your credit. So you start somewhere. So if you do need trade lines, we could offer trade lines or it could be different things. Then we have a stage where we said, okay, you want to start a business. How do you set up your EIN and how you set up your tax bracket and everything? You go to Monica. So you set up that and you get your SAMS number and boom, you're ready for government contracting. So in stages, you have to plan what you want to do. As much as the sisters are on, I'm going to do government contracting because I want to make easy money also. And I don't know if the audience is familiar with government contracting. Basically, if you have a toilet, the government needs 20,000 roll of toilet papers every 3 months. And if you bid for it and say that you won the bid, you basically find somebody that could supply the government. So you say, for example, you have a credit card, you know, the company charges you 20,000 for 40,000 worth of rolls of toilet paper. And you said, okay, I'll get it. So you put the money up with your credit card. As soon as the government gets it, they pay you within 15 days. You get your check or whatever. So government contracting is not like you're going to a 9-to-5. You just got to be there for the bid. And if you win the bid, you got to be able to supply what you bid it for. And then you go from there. You know, the government normally goes with the person that offers the cheapest amount to pay for the good. If I'm wrong, Monica will correct me. But government contracting is easy. You could stay home and do government contracting. So if you have a regular job now and you say, okay, if I pick my credit and I'm at a certain level, I could probably get enough credit cards to be able to do some sort of government contracting. So you got to start somewhere. And you got to think of how you're going to get this extra money. You got to show good credit, good income, and you got to know how to raise funds. You know, and that's what our economic show on every Wednesday is about. It's 6 p.m. on Sunday, it's Black News 102. It's about uplifting each individual and showing you how to do it. If you want us to show you how to do it, that's a whole other scenario. But we show people how to do that every single Wednesday. So with the Black Bank, everything is all good with the Black Bank, but you still got to be qualified. Ain't no handout. You're not going to pull the black card out on the Black Bank and say, hey, I'm black, man. So, hey, need some money. You know, you still got to be qualified with your credit and everything. So, hey, because they're scrutinized twice as much as other banks anyway. So, hey.
Go ahead, I'll call Jess.
Go ahead.
Yes, I was going to say, I definitely agree with Garfield. You don't get no special privileges. It probably just adds value in your community that you have one of your own providing that can speak the language, but you're still going to have to go with the same eligibility requirements of another bank. The one thing that you could do with the black banks is that if there are opportunities out there where they can get where it benefits low and moderate income individuals and you being able to get those grants shifted through them to help your community, that could be of a benefit because they won't, it depends on who owns it and how user friendly they are to the community as well, because it also can play against you. They can be just as hard-nosed as the rest of the banks out there. But one benefit that I would see is that if they do have opportunities to get some of that type of money, grant funding for community-based buildings, then that we would hope that they would be giving out favor to those who are in compliance and that would do a good deed to our community development or our community individuals, organizations.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, if you guys were talking about credit, and I mentioned credit a lot in the last segment, so, you know, I get straight to the point. So I notice a lot of black people have credit. They obtain credit, but then they overuse their credit and then they get in debt.
And then they get in debt, and then it seems like everything that they do, from their income, whatever it is, it turns into a paycheck-to-paycheck thing because it's like they're behind. They ran up debt. So explain to the listeners, what is credit and what is debt, and what should they go about to obtain good credit and stay above the debt water?
That's a Garfield question. There you go. Well, Garfield. Okay.
You're there,
so,
Brother Garfield.
His phone probably dropped off.
He dropped off? Okay.
No, he's still here. I guess maybe technical difficulty.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Well, that's the credit is Garfield's specialty, but I will say this, when because I deal a lot with a lot of companies who do government contracts and then individuals who are just getting started, when you get involved with getting the different credits out there, of course it's going to help your credit scores, and it helps from a personal perspective when you're buying assets, cash producing assets, definitely. And, you know, they want you to make sure that you're paying within 30 days or you're keeping that low if you're dealing with credit cards. If you're getting into debt and you're not paying it off, then, of course, you're digging a hole for yourself, or it's going to become a negative favor on your report. I will also speak to you in terms for the business credit as well. Once you start doing big business or your business grows and you do start doing business with the bank, or whether it's black-owned or not, that they're pulling those Dun & Bradstreet reports, which is where your business credit is being reported and where they're making their decisions. That goes back to the whole economic power deal, is that decision-making is going based off of those type of reports. So a lot of times when you're participating in different applications, it will ask you what's your personal net worth, what do you have in your savings, your check-ins, who do you owe, who are your debtors out there, and they can play against you. So you don't want to get involved with debt. And if you do, it has to be where it's controlled debt, meaning it's not out of control. And you have to get it online, and you have to get it together. Now, Garfield, what he does is he helps people with their credit report and helping them getting rid of some things that are involved with the credit report, but I can't speak to that because I'm not involved with that part. But only thing I can say is that maintaining, you can have as many credit cards as you want, but as long as you're maintaining them, you're paying them within 30 days and your lines are less than 35%, I want to say, then you are in good favor. But if you're not, then you're going to put yourself in a situation. And if you get involved young, college students love to do this, but you get involved young, and then you change your life around and you want to do some great things, and then you can't because now you have all these negative lines in your credit report, then you're going to have to see people like Garfield or someone who does credit restoration to help you get back online. So it's not a good thing. Garfield, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay. And you might want to hear this question again. Go ahead. I tried to hold it down for you.
Always. That's what teams do. Teamwork makes the dream work, huh?
Teams win. Yeah. No, the question was, I was saying that a lot of us black folks, we obtain credit, because when you were talking about credit in the last segment, but then as they obtain credit, they seem to run up their credit, then they come up with debt. My question was to explain to the listeners, what is credit and what is debt, so they can, be more financially literate to that term, avoid debt pretty much, and keep their credit at a good standard.
Hey, avoiding debt is it sounds good, let's look at Katrina, for example. You live in Louisiana, you have your job, but yet still, Katrina comes and throws you in a whole new mix that you weren't in 5, 6, 7 weeks before Katrina came to New Orleans. So you have to now live off of your credit card until, you get your government money or whatever. So now debt is more than you could ever imagine. You know, so sometimes having debt is just, you know, it's unpredictable. You know, and we have to really think about it. This is why I said, if you don't have 6 months a backup plan, you know, 6 months worth of rent or 6 months worth of mortgage, you got to put yourself in a position where you can do better. Having good credit is it works out for you. It's helpful. It's a backup plan. You know, a couple of years ago, I had to do these doctors had claimed I had cancer and all type of craziness scared the hell out of me. So I had to end up doing some crazy surgery, which I really never needed. And while I was on the operating table, I don't know if I ever told this story, Monica. I practically almost died on the table and they had to resuscitate me.
Yes.
All
yep.
over a surgery that I didn't even have to do. I didn't even have to do the surgery. And when I had the surgery, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't talk. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't function. But having good credit at the time helped me out. Having credit cards helped me out. I could do cash advances. I had multiple guys, like 18 different credit cards. I didn't even use them. You know, as a matter of fact, I had a card from 1994 when I was in school as a teenager, and that card grew so much, it grew into a 27,000 card. So it was pretty much like a $1,000 card. And then over the years, because I kept it, I paid on time. And they just said, hey, this guy's a good guy, man. I would use it and pay it right back. And so they just increased it over the years. And from I was in college, I had the card. So that was one of the cards I was living off of. You know, it turned into a $27,000 card through Citibank, AT&T Citibank. They offer you, as you start going to college, they offer you these credit cards and give you $1,000. They start you off good. They're right outside of college. And it paid off. Me being somebody that pay on time and I've got all these cards, it paid off. So I could have survived without even having a job because of my credit card. So I would use one credit card to pay off the next. I didn't pay this bill with that card and just make sure that my credit was fine. Because that's just my thing, credit. And I said, I don't want to have no blemishes, nothing. So having credit is good, you know, but make sure you're not using the credit in a bad way. Just to say, hey, I could buy a sneakers today or buy a hat. I could go on vacation. And, you know, just limit yourself. You know, have self-control. And that's another thing, man, this whole reparations movement. If everybody, black person got $1 million, I guarantee you that $1 million would go right back into the Korean's hand, into the Jew man's hand, into the white man's hand. It's going to go in everybody's hands except the black man's hand. Yep. We got to know what we're doing, man. And what we're doing right now, this is why Cheryl Stevenson, who's a part of the team, talked about get you a team in 2017 because you have to circulate your dollars. That's the key. You got to circulate your dollars. That means Monica is my econ. She deals with setting up the W-4s. So, and the W-4s and how to you know, write it in on your job and fill out the form properly. She also deals with other things also, setting up the business and all that stuff. So we could spend money with Monica. Monica could, and then people who have good credit, we could just pass them on, get the credit, and then start dealing with government contracts. So we are circulating the dollars, you know. So if you need help with one thing, you could get help with another thing. She supports Z-Black. The other day she signed up a Z-Black card. I made $50 off her because she came under me. She decided to get a Z-Black card. I got $50. So now I'm going to find something to spend money on her. When we make a trip, I might be the one that paid the hotel for her. So I'm circulating the dollars. So it's not going anywhere. It's coming right back in full circle for her. And you know what, too, Monica? I'm going to use that black card and pay for it so you can see that. That same $50 you pay is going to come back and help you.
I don't know.
All right?
I'll take it, too. I'll take it.
Yep.
All right. Here's a question.
That's what it is, bro. And, you know, and another thing, too, we got to think about it in a bigger sense. This is why it's good to have networks. Networks are good. What do you do? You say, okay, I write books. Okay, I need to write a book. This is what I'm going to do. You're going to show me how to do it. So it's not only through money we're circulating the dollars, but it's also through a mindset, through helping us through to different things in life. It don't have to be exactly monetary, you know. It could be information. Right now, people get paid for what we're talking about. People get paid every day for this. You see, Boyce Watkins got a whole school for all the stuff that we're talking. Yeah, people are making money off of what we're talking about right now on raising awareness.
Well, here's a quick question. Yep. You talk about schools and whatnot. Recently, two or three elders that I speak with on a regular basis stated, if you really want to make a change within our communities or what have you, it's better to start with the children. That's the statement I've been hearing all week. And here's a question to both you and Monica. How old should someone start, how old should a child be before they start being taught about finances, money, economics, business, or whatever?
You know, it's glad you say that because, you know, Dr. Boyce Watkins has a financial literacy class for six, starting at 6 years old. So I would say as early as preschool. If they can start pipeline the prison industry in preschool, then we can start teaching our kids about economics in preschool. We about financial literacy, about business. We can teach them the basics of saving, how to manage anything. I think we take advantage of what kids can learn, but in those early stages, especially if we're talking middle school, fifth grade, anywhere from third grade possibly, and especially middle school. I know a couple years ago, South Carolina did they pushed out, I think it was 19 schools, anywhere from 10 to 19 schools, $100,000 to 19 middle schools. And those what they were designed to do to prepare those students to be the next leaders of South Carolina government. So Dave Pollard and pushed that money down there to identify students who were eligible or may have shown potential to be able to learn state government, and they have actually they're training those kids all the way up. And so I think we can do the same, and I think Dr. Boyce Watkins has gotten us in a good start to provide those classes as young as 6 years old.
I mean, wow, that's amazing. I would just basically say, let's make sure that is something that you could add to the curriculum, you know, where you could, we are very, I used to be a part of a union back in the day, and they have such a network, you know, whether it's 1199 or 1707 in New York, they're very powerful. And I think if we attack it that way, then that makes sure all the high schools, the juniors, not just the seniors, the juniors, learn about, you know, credit and the importance of credit and so forth. I think that's very important. But I'll leave it there. Hello?
We've discussed credit, debit, education, value, and what have you, the aspects of economics and so on. What does black power look like without black economics?
Hey, that's not a moment of silence, and that will answer your question.
Say it again.
It's a funeral.
Oh, Lord.
It's a funeral, a reoccurring funeral. That's all it is. Next question.
We're provided that economics is based on this without. The fact that it's based on your decision making and how you spend,
right.
You know, this, how you spend your money. What does it look like without it? Well, we already seeing that. We're spending, we should be asking is, how does it look with it? Making good decisions by producing cash-producing assets, by buying cash-producing assets, meaning cash, you have the cash, you buy the asset, and you produce more cash by investing in stocks and bonds and real estate and things like that, getting money back by providing, opening up businesses, storefront businesses, giving quality products, and employing our own, doing right by our employees. If you're hiring people, then, for example, if we have government contracts right now in a few different states. Now, according to the rules, is that even though there's minimum wages out there, like $7.25 or whatever it is, it varies per state, the government has a rule with the Department of Labor wage and determination that you, if you get a government contract, you have to pay employees at least $10.10 per hour plus another $4.27 for health and welfare. That makes $14.37 at a minimum. So when you bid on a contract, you win the contract, you know that in your cost analysis, you should have at least budgeted to pay someone $14.37, right? But what people do, people who bring in these jobs into our communities, where it would increase our black economics, they will pay you less. That's a lack of knowledge for people who are being hired. So those who want to be just job seekers, want to be W-2 employees, if you are working as a contractor, you're working for someone who has a government contract, you need to understand that your network can be increased if your employer pays you properly. If you're getting paid less than $14.37 at a minimum, then you already know that our black economy is not working for us because we're not treating our employees properly. We have to be able to give an incentive. If you know anything about economics, things work when incentives come. And one of the examples is in the colleges, in our HBCUs or any college for that matter. When the states were giving money to the colleges for how many students graduate, the incentive was is that if you produce graduates, we would give you money per graduate. Well, now the states have withdrawn and say, okay, now we're going to have to give you money if the student is produced, if you're bridging the gap between careers where they're getting a job after graduation, those type of things. Because what they were doing was, we're going to get money per person. We're just going to recycle. Same thing with at-risk programs, creating alternative schools for children. That only thing we were doing was, They were giving you the opportunity to bring money into your environment by helping students, children and adults alike, with getting jobs and things like that. So they were just recycling the numbers. They weren't really producing anything. These kids weren't even really learning nothing. They would kick them out the program and guess what? Bring them back in. You know why? Because the same dollar they got from in 2016, they're going to get the same dollar in 2017, so they're not really producing anything. And so when we think in terms of what would it look like without it, well, we see it. What would it look like with it is us providing the proper incentives for that our people can produce and increase our network by being good employees and doing great things to help us with the revenue. But us in return as business owners, doing right by employees, by giving them bonuses, by giving them promotions based on performances, things like that. But when we have our people just working and they have not received a raise in 5 or 6 years, we cannot have black economics. So I would say, what would black economics, how would it look with it? Because we already don't have it.
Wow. Brother Godfrey, you want to chime in on that?
No, I'll leave it there. She made some great points.
Okay.
I'll leave it right there.
Okay. All right. Here's one last question. you see some brothers and sisters, they got their tax returns in hand right now. And you got a couple of minutes to guide them, to tell them something to do with their tax return. To both of you, what advice would you give to that person with their tax return in their hand at this moment?
You want me to go first?
She can go first. Of course.
Okay.
Ladies first. Our beauty before age, right? Our age before beauty. But go ahead.
I would definitely, if they don't have insurance, I would definitely get them to invest in insurance. One i.e. example, life insurance, and the other with something that will produce where they can cash out later on in date. The second, I would definitely get them involved in just for starters, either a money market or an IRA or some type of investment that they could see the return on their investment. And two, I would make sure that they're actually the funding that they got. I'll make sure they have some lifestyle money, but that some of that money that they have in an emergency plan. And those are my options.
Okay, Brother Godfrey.
Yeah, I would basically have them do an evaluation first of their life. Basically, a rundown. I mean, and this is where Sister Monica would come in, because she would basically have them do up some charts. She's like a chart lady. So, you know, have them look at their lives, look at their expenses, and then chart themselves to see what is their goals as far as a business, as far as something for the family, for the future. And then from there, you decide which direction you want to go. Are you going to try to get funding? Are you going to try and get, if you're not trying to get funding, are you going to raise your credit score by getting trade lines? And if you do get funding, what type of business are you trying to open up? Are you trying to open up a catering business? Are you trying to open up a restaurant? What are you trying to do? And then you just take it from there and do what you got to do. We have to look at our goals and create a business plan behind what we're doing. Stop trying to rush. Get up and say, oh, I'm a hairdresser. I know how to do hair. I don't need you to tell me. Nah, you need to develop a plan. Who's going to be your clientele? How are you going to go about it? And then that's what you need to do. You know? And you take it from there. But that's, you got to take it slow, man. You can't just jump up and say, I want to get into stock markets. We have a guy, African Emporium, and another brother from UCLA, so he deals with stocks and everything. So you got to take our time and deal with it that way, instead of trying to rush. But hey, it all starts with credit, basic. Get your credit right. You know? And then also get you a team in 2017. So I got a team, and the reason why I got a team is because I can't do everything by myself. So this is why anything I'm doing, I always bring them with me. Cheryl and Monica, if I'm going out of town, hey, I gotta see if these sisters can make it. Because you got, as a team you work better. So you correct each other's mistakes. Yeah, you know? And that's how you get better at what you're doing.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a good advice. Good advice. As people would say, it's a marathon, not a race. So take it slow.
Mm-hmm.
And get that. Well, Brother Garfield and Sister Monica, before we roll out, do you guys have a website or anything you guys would like to drop on and? You know, for people who would like to contact you for your expertise.
Hey, definitely. DaggerSquadInc.com. Go to the website, DaggerSquadInc.com. If you want to contact me, DaggerSquad1@gmail.com. Sister Monica, you can contact her that way also. Phone numbers, 1-800-518-2817. That's 1-800-518-2817, extension 901. Extension 901. So that's 1-800-518-2817, extension 901. So that's it from me, man. Anybody want to contact me? I mean, go on the website, you see all the different things that we're doing, and you know, if you want to be a part of it, just hit us up. All right.
And I just say thank you guys for letting me come in and support Garfield on the show and get more information out to more people. And definitely y'all hit up DaggerSquad.com because all of the information is there. And then Garfield would distribute out, if you email, he would distribute out to the team, and we'll definitely get back with you and help and train in any way that we can.
All right, great. Thank you for being on the show. And
thank you.
I learned a lot.
And,
And one more thing before I go, listeners out there, our Raising Awareness Group, as you know, we put together, you know, once-in-a-lifetime events, and we will be putting together an event April 29th, 2017, and the thesis of the show is Health in the African Community, Health and Body. Health in the African Community, Health Body, Healthy Spirit, Healthy Relationships. It will be featuring Dr. Takah Maat Kilimanjaro of the University Kemet Press, and also will be featuring Brother Sanjedi Fahimi out of Philly. $20 adults for entrance, $10 for teens between 12 and 18, and any children under 12 years old is entered free. It will be taking place at the Park Avenue Banquet Hall, 4942 Parkside Avenue, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we'll be in the building from 2 to 6 p.m. So, you know, anybody in the East Coast corridor or anywhere, if you want to come out and support and learn about, you know, your health of the African community, you know, and learn about a healthy conscience, please come check us out. I guarantee you, you won't be disappointed. And on that note, thank you for all tuning in. Thank you, Brother Garfield, Sister Monica, Brother Fred. As usual, you know, this was a good episode. And, you know, we'll see you guys next week. And once again, I thank you guys for coming on, man. Love and support, man.
Hey, anytime, brother. Anytime, brother.
Peace.
Anytime. All right?
Peace.
Peace, and thanks for having us on.
Peace.
All right. All right. Cool.
All right.
Good night.
Peace. Good night.
Good night.